Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA, a special day before Thanksgiving edition of the program. Thanks for joining us. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with us this week is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Nice to see you.
Good afternoon.
Glad you can make it to the station today. And if you've got a question for Mayor Barton today, please give us a call. 496-1999 is our telephone number. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can always tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. Well, of course, it's a fair amount colder than the last time we had you on this program, and that does a lot of different things to cities. I wondered, what kinds of resources does Crawfordsville have to help people when it gets colder? Especially, I think a lot of people will think helping the homeless is something that becomes a real issue around this time every year.
Right. You know, obviously you deal with, you know, people who maybe don't have a place to go, but you also worry about people who maybe have a house but can't afford their heating bill and maybe they've been shut off and those kinds of issues. So we think we have a pretty strong safety net in our community through the local churches and nonprofits and charities, and they all really work well together. So we feel like we have a good setup. We have a website called Mott Cares, based on Montgomery County. Mott Cares, I think it's .org, that people can go to and have all those resources at their fingertips and really know where to turn for help.
So it's designed sort of as this one-stop
shop. One-stop, right, exactly, yes. And it'll direct them in the, you know, it's based on broad categories, then narrows down what your issue might be.
A lot of communities have either resources that they've saved over time or resources that they put into place specifically when it gets cold to, for instance, help people out with their heating bills and things like that as your gas and your electric bills go up. Is there something like that in place in Crawfordsville?
Well, I believe there is through the nonprofits. It's not something that the city directly does, but through our nonprofits and, like I said, a lot of the church groups will have mechanisms in place. We also have the Hub Ministries in Crawfordsville. It does a lot of work with people. And then, of course, you know, on the government side, there is, you know, like the township level that does provide some assistance to people in need. But nothing directly on the city side, but we work very hard to make sure we get people matched up with the help that's out there.
You think about the elderly, for instance, at times like this, people who are living on fixed incomes, and when you have fluctuating bills for your gas and your electric, that can be tough to deal with for people who are on fixed incomes. And so if you can't help financially, do you have anybody who at least will look in on those people and make sure, hey, are you doing okay?
We do. We try to pass that around. And we, like I said, all the organizations work well together. You know, if there's an immediate concern, obviously we get somebody right out there from the city to kind of check in on them and to assess the situation. And then we try to match them up with maybe entities that can help or groups that can help. So we get all kinds of concerns, all kinds of interesting, you know, calls, and we try to follow up on everything to make sure that people are taken care of.
You think about also the roads. I was talking with Chris McBarnes on this program last week about what's going on in Frankfort, and he's got lots of road problems even when it's nice and warm and pretty outside.
Right, right.
But when it gets to be wintertime, you get a lot more damage to the roads. And how are your streets faring? Were they in a position where the cold weather was going to particularly negatively affect them the same way that Frankfort is dealing with?
Well, that's always a concern, you know, and last winter hit us very hard, and we really had to spend a lot of time in the spring and the summer trying to repair our roads from that brutal winter. So we felt like we were just kind of maybe getting caught up, and here we go, it's time to head into winter again. So I know the street commissioner and the street department's out there working aggressively on those things. I think our streets are in pretty good shape. You know, the problems we experience are maybe some congestion issues. We have some state highway detours that are greatly affecting our local community right now. So once those are opened back up and we get traffic flowing normally, I think we'll be in pretty good shape. And you know, they're prepared for winter weather. They've already had to do one small snow removal, and they're constantly adjusting that process to make sure it's as effective as possible. So we're ready for winter, and then obviously we get into spring, I'm sure we will have potholes and those issues to deal with again.
Sure, as you have the freeze and thaw cycle, it's
absolutely
definitely rough on the roads. One thing I haven't asked you or anybody else is, I know, of course, in the past you've had the big, heavy metal snow plows that are just tearing up anything that gets in their way, whether
right.
it be snow and ice or whether it be concrete and asphalt. Has the technology that your city has used in the last 5 to 10 years changed? And is there a way to make those less damaging to roads but still effective enough to clear the streets?
We are making changes in how we do those things. And, you know, you have certainly those large plow trucks, and our most recent purchases have been smaller because the neighborhoods are tighter. You get into cul-de-sacs, you get into those issues. So we've gone to a larger fleet of smaller vehicles, and then obviously still have some of the heavy, you know, vehicles for applications where it's needed. But we are transitioning ours, and like I said, our recent purchases have reflected that. We're also focusing, our street department's focusing on pretreatment. And this last small snowfall really worked well. They had pretreated the main routes, and it just didn't stick there for a while. And so they were well ahead when they did that.
Are you pretreating primarily with salt, primarily with sand, primarily with some of the other treatments that have been deemed more environmentally viable right. in the last few years? And I know the city of Chicago has gone to using beet juice some cases.
Right, right. And this gets a little out of my expertise here, so I have to be careful. But we are using beet juice, and we're using a combination at times of salt and of beet juice. But we're transitioning over to beet juice, and this last snowfall was our first experience with the beet juice product, and it seemed to work well.
I worked in Chicago about 6 or 7 years ago when they first started doing that. It was kind of fascinating because you had entire expressways that looked like they were running red with blood because of the beet juice from the melting snow. Speaking of that, Tony Rozworski was telling me on this program a couple of weeks ago that the cost of salt, he said, has gone up. It's almost doubled in the last year. Have you experienced that as well?
It has. You know, it's been a supply problem, and obviously with that comes an increase in price. So we worked really hard in the off season, if you will, over the summer to get our salt supply build up and try to control our cost as much as possible. So we have a good stockpile ready to go, but it certainly has risen, that's for sure.
The process, a lot of times, for people who don't know, is that cities will try to buy these things in bulk when they're out of season, and you try to get the lowest price. You can do this with salt. You can do it with fuel in some cases if fuel's seen to spike in price. So were you able to secure a slightly lower price by buying your salt in the off-season?
Yes, and we participate in a state program, a state bid program. So it's bought in quantity through the state. So we get a price with all of our entities coming together. The challenge there is you have to predict your usage. So, and you have to purchase a minimum, and then there's a maximum that you can buy at that price. So you have to kind of hit that target. And obviously the weather is unpredictable. You don't know, you know what last winter was and maybe the last five, but what will this year hold? You don't know. So, you know, when people do that, obviously you're hedging your bets, and sometimes you overpurchase, sometimes you underpurchase. And so that's kind of tricky to do, but I'm fortunate the street commissioner in my case is he's a numbers guy, so he's pretty thorough with that and does a great job with that.
So you think you've got enough, unless we have another winter like we had last year?
My understanding is we have enough under contract already purchased to get us through. I'm not going to say that it's all actually sitting there on site right now. We only have the capacity to store so much, but
you have
purchase
access to it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today. If you've got a question for us, give us a call at 496-1999. You can send an email to ask@WBAA.org. You can tweet your questions also to @WBAA News on Twitter. I was also thinking about energy efficiency because I was thinking about my own house and trying to make sure that I wasn't heating the great outdoors at some point. And then that caused me to ponder city buildings. And do you take a look when it gets cold or when it gets hot, indeed, with air conditioning, to say how efficient are our city buildings? Are there changes we need to make sure that we're not literally kind of, you know, heating these things by burning dollar bills inside?
Sure, sure. We've taken a serious look at all of our facilities over the last several years. And the city building, for example, we spent quite a bit remodeling and trying to redo areas and make them more efficient. You know, for example, in the summer, we had our entire second floor was supplied with window air conditioners, and that clearly wasn't very efficient.
Those are very inefficient, yeah.
2 years ago, we went through and did a central air unit, a high-efficiency unit in that second floor, and that's obviously cut the cost for us. So we're always looking at those types of things. You know, there are a lot of programs out there that, you know, you can bring a consultant in and measure and do all these things, and we've not gone to that level yet. I think you have to really weigh that out and decide, you know, what you're going to pay that person and what's the possible benefit. So We're pretty comfortable where we're at on most of our facilities right now, though.
There are a number of communities, and I lived and worked in Bloomington for 5 years, and they were really big on this whole LEED certification idea, trying to be as green as possible with their buildings. And one component of that, of course, is trying to be as energy efficient as possible. So you it sounds like, haven't risen to that level of trying to get there yet.
We're not there at that point. And part of it has to do with the age of our facilities. You know, most of our facilities have considerable age on them, with the exception of maybe, you know, the police department and the rec center and some of those things. But certainly City Hall is 1930 area. So, you know, that's a little more challenging in a building like that. But one thing we've done just in the last month is we've changed how we purchase our natural gas. And we heat most of our buildings with natural gas. And we're buying that on the wholesale market now through the deregulation. And we'll see how that plays out. But we certainly know from our counterparts in county government in Montgomery County and our school corporations that has been a great tool for them, and they've saved considerable amounts doing that.
So. We got an emailed question to us. John from Crawfordsville got a hold of us and wants to know, what's the progress on the Ben Hur building?
Okay, very good question. And that's unfolding as we speak. And you know, that's a large building in our downtown. It's stood vacant for about 20 years. We are in the process of taking that property on back taxes. The current owner, out-of-state owner, has not paid taxes, never paid a penny in taxes on that property in 20 years. Well, they haven't owned it for 20 years, but probably the 10 years that they've owned it, they've not paid any taxes. So we are in the process of doing that, and that obviously involves the county as we move through that process. That process will wrap up on December the 8th, and then the county can hand the title to that property over to a new developer, and we have a developer that's made a presentation that the county has accepted, a group out of West Virginia. They will then take that project on and move forward. And they have a plan, long-range plan, to put condominiums and hotel space with a nice restaurant on the first floor. So we have a solid plan. This group, particular group, is they have the expertise. They have the experience. They've done similar projects. And I'm convinced that they can carry it out and make it happen. So it's in the works.
What's the time frame on that?
Again, the property transfer should take place after December the 8th. So, you know, their first goal will be to get the outside secured. There's some problems with the exterior, the terracotta. That needs to be reworked. They'll immediately get to work on that, and then, you know, they'll have to go through the tax credit process and some of those things to make this project work. But
so it would seem like it'd probably be a year or two before this all comes to fruition.
Before it's all said and done, you know, and the project's done and up and running, I would say give it 2 to 3 years. These things don't, you know, they don't move really quickly when you're involving federal programs and things like that. But we're following a very similar path we followed on the old abandoned Culver Hospital in our community to take the property on taxes and move it over to a new entity that, you know, we are convinced will do something with. And we put some safeguards in there. We know the new developer, we've put some pretty tight regulations on them that they have to perform. And if they don't perform, they'll be out of the picture and we'll move on. So we're not going to get stuck in this stagnant 20, 30-year situation again.
All right, John, thanks so much for your question. If you've got a question today for Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, give us a phone call. We're at area code 765-496-1999. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter. Well, you mentioned on last month's program, just kind of in passing, that R.R. Donnelly was doing a big investment. They're investing $15-16 million extra in their existing facility. And what they're doing is kind of interesting. They're doing kind of digital printing with essentially really high-quality printers, trying to do print runs of between like 10 and 1,000 different materials at a time. And that's apparently a space in that market that's not as well-trodden as some of the really small or really large print.
Right.
And that caused me to think larger scale about the idea of having companies come into your community and try something, you know, that they haven't done before, that they haven't done elsewhere. And you mentioned also on the last month's program, you've got this gigabit internet now, which is something you can certainly leverage to your advantage with respect to economic development.
Definitely.
And so can you use factors like that to try to go to companies and say, let us be your sandbox. Let us be the place that you try things that maybe you were afraid to try somewhere else.
We have to do that. I mean, I think that I'm convinced of that. And you know, you see that happening here in Lafayette area with Matchbox and some things like that. But we're trying to position ourselves, and I think we have a history there. We have a strength. If you look at Nucor Steel sitting just outside of Crawfordsville, that's exactly what happened there. That technology was not proven. Will it work? Will it not work? You know, and it has worked, and it's been very successful. So taking and transferring that to the high-tech side is really what we're after. If you look at the Commerce Park in Crawfordsville, and I know the Commerce Park is, you know, is probably a sore subject with a lot of people. You know, they're not convinced that it was a wise move at the time. And, you know, my point there is it's over and done. We have it. Let's try to capitalize on it and make the best we can out of it, whether it was wise at the time or not. And that park is really geared towards high-tech things. So now with the new internet capacity that we have to transfer data and move data, we are very well positioned. But you have to couple that with the existing businesses that are there. And Donley has done a great job of that. You know, as they're closing down these old, outdated facilities elsewhere, that work is coming to Crawfordsville. And capturing how that market works today is entirely different than what it was 20, 30 years ago. You know, a printer doesn't order a million copies of a book, you know, right out of the gate. They order a few, see how it goes, and they just keep coming back with smaller orders. So you have to have that ability. And we're excited about the Donley expansion because that completes what they call the platform. They can do anything from one all the way up to thousands or millions of copies, really, with their large presses. So they can do anything there. They're very flexible, and it's built on that high technology, the changing technology. So we're excited about that.
So with respect to this idea, there are, of course, pitfalls to it because many companies, when they come in, say, can you offer us a tax abatement? Can you give us some incentive to move into your community? And if you are going to set yourself up as a sandbox, then and you're going to work with, for instance, startups, you have to face A, that people are going to want some sort of incentive, and B, that if you're going for a bunch of startups, a high percentage of startups, just like a high percentage of small businesses, fail in their first couple of years.
Right.
So are you in any sort of position where you can take those risks economically such that you're kind of gambling on if the first five fail, the sixth might be Google and we're set for life,
right?
You know?
Well, I don't think we're there right now. But I think what we're trying to do is create a program that will get us there. Certainly anything that we consider for abatement, we have a very clear formula that we follow. And it's based on the amount of investment. It's based on the potential job creation, all those factors. So it's not just this pie in the sky. We hand everything out, you know, to somebody that thinks they can perform or you know, create a business. That's really not how that works. The real gap there is in creating new startups. That's pretty hard to abate those kinds of things. So we don't have many tools in the toolbox there. And when I say we, I mean not just Crawfordsville, the entire state.
Local
governments do not have many tools in that toolbox. So, you know, that's something that we have to really work with the legislature on to try to put our heads together to come up with a better set of tools there to promote those kinds of things.
So you're saying it's easier for you to get a proposal from either an existing business in your community or a large outside business
Absolutely.
That's otherwise established than it is for me and Kristen Malavenda to start our own news startup
Absolutely.
In Crawfordsville.
Much easier.
Okay.
Much easier. And really the easiest thing where we have the most tools, if you were, you know, established and operating in another state and wanted to move that operation to Indiana, to my community, I have even more tools in the tool chest. But once we narrow that down and it's local people trying to start up, it's pretty tough. Now, we have some new tools. Our economic development branch has some money for startups and to expand local businesses that we obtained through a federal program. That's helping. And we are right now starting our Center for Community Development combined with Wabash College, and that's being funded through a Lilly initiative. And that really focuses on taking these young entrepreneurial minds and really stimulating them and trying to get things started.
I was just going to ask about that because you've got a college community. We have one here.
Right.
And I think there's been a lot of focus, at least since the Daniels administration and through the Pence administration, of we've got a brain drain problem in Indiana.
Do.
And we need to make the college kids who are so smart and so well educated from fairly good universities in this state stick around.
Right. And we look at this, you know, look at the numbers, look at the statistics in our case and with Wabash College. Many of these young men go on to do really good things. We need to capture some of that and keep it in our community and keep it in Indiana, keep it in this part of the state. And that's what we're really after. And that's what the Lilly Initiative really tries to address. And that center will be up and operating anytime. We're going to occupy the entire third floor of the Chase Bank building in downtown Crawfordsville. We're combining that with our economic development group. Our Chamber of Commerce and our Main Street group will all be co-located in one spot.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that a couple months ago.
Yeah, we really want to just, you know, let that get together. And I'm convinced that that will take us to the next level and really start to focus on these young minds. And another move that we're really making is we're working very aggressively within the Wabash Alumni Network to go out and find some of these successful entrepreneurs that exist and pull some of those resources back to our community possibly. So
now, when you say resources, do you mean you're telling the people come back home to Crawfordsville where you went to college, or you'd rather have the financial resources that they have, both, neither?
Well, both, I think. But what we're really after is as they are creating new jobs and creating new spinoffs and startups, let's look at bringing some of that back to this community.
So so you, Wabash graduate Todd Barton, if you go and start a company somewhere and you're located, say, in Indianapolis, then whoever follows you in the mayor's office would come to you and say, well, Todd, we understand that you went to Wabash and we'd love to have a part of your company in Crawfordsville.
Absolutely.
Is that the idea?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We know that there's a desire out there in within that core group of people to start, you know, making some things happen. And really there's been, I think, and this is just my take, but an awakening within that alumni network that they have to start really focusing on building up the community. They've spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of resources on creating a beautiful campus, top-notch faculty. I mean, everything is really clicking over there. But at the end of the day, if you have a wonderful college in a community that's not so good, you're in an uphill battle. And you have to be able to recruit the top students and faculty to come there. You need a quality community. And they are starting to realize that and are helping the community more. And that partnership is really strengthening and growing.
So you said just a couple of minutes ago, you only have so many resources that you can dole out for startup companies. If you've got a senior who's graduating from Wabash and wants to start a company in Crawfordsville, what do you do to entice that person to start it there versus starting it in Indianapolis where they've got a much larger potential customer base?
Well, up until this point, we've not had many resources to really do that other than just really, you know, spending a lot of time with that person and trying to make as many connections as you can and try to, you know, maybe match them up with people who can take care of financing and those kinds of things. It's been kind of piecemeal to this point. But this initiative with Wabash and Lilly will bridge that gap. And that, there's a staff there that really will start to learn this system and can really start to match those people up. So we're getting there. We're not there, but we're getting there. We're making steps in the right direction.
Do you have spaces that are already carved out for these potential businesses to start?
We do not at this time, but again, we're going to try to identify spaces and, you know, we really like the concept that we see here in Lafayette with Matchbox. We really like that. We're not sure what kind of size we would need for something like that in our community. Obviously, it's a smaller community, but we think there's a good potential there to do some things as, you know, similar to that in our community. So that's something that we're going to be looking at through that initiative with the college.
Is that how you envision it, as sort of a co-working space? Because what Matchbox did, for people who don't know, is basically took a disused sort of warehouse-like building, made it into this open concept collaborative workspace where a bunch of smart people can come together, bounce ideas off of one another, and you could use that collective brain trust to make one
right.
person's idea better than they might have been able to make it themselves.
Right.
Is that how you envision it working?
We do. We do. And we're going to do some of that with the piece, you know, in the Chase Bank building. We're going to do some of that. There'll be some opportunities for those people to come together and collaborate and start to think in these terms. But we don't have, you know, an actual set aside facility where they can, you know, pay and join and belong. We're not there. But that's probably a direction that we're going.
So your community, especially on the Courthouse Square, is very much like what, say, Delphi has or what Greencastle has. You've got an historic area that you've got some empty store space in that you could easily take some of those buildings, some of those historic buildings, which have really good bones to them. I've seen many of these buildings that are historic, that are a century old, look really cool when they've been rehabbed. Could you find a way to get businesses that develop out of this co-working space into those spaces, those really prominent spaces in your community? Because somebody who comes through on 231 is going to see much of that space.
Right.
Is there a way to help incentivize that to happen?
We have a few things in place now, you know, through facade grants and loans and some programs like that. Really, the unique challenge we have is there's not a lot of available space in our community, in our downtown. We've tried to move some things in the downtown here in the last few months and really cannot find space. Now, I'm not saying that there's not anything empty. There is. But finding space that's workable that they feel like they can get in for a reasonable cost and fix up and move into, there's really not much available. And sadly, what had happened over a few decades, that a lot of the downtown was torn down, and it's just gone. It's not there anymore. So we need to really look at some of those things. And I think we have to kind of think in terms that we use in the big sense. You know, we talk about economic development and building shell buildings or spec buildings. That is very successful for communities doing that. And we're looking at a shell building in our Commerce Park because, you know, 90% of the RFIs that come through want an existing building. But I think we also have to apply that to the smaller sense. For startups, can't go out and build a building. So if we have space created that's ready to occupy, I think we could have some success there.
You mentioned the facade grants, and this is exactly what Greencastle is doing with its Stellar Communities grant. They're spending something like $10 or $15 million updating the facades on the Courthouse Square there in Putnam County. And when I drive through Crawfordsville, I look at it and I think there are a lot of historic-looking storefronts, things that obviously haven't changed much or have kept at least the original character of the storefront from some time in the past. And then I look at what Lafayette is trying to do along Main Street and along Columbia Street, and there have been a lot of storefronts there that have been updated, renovated, made to look more modern. And it strikes me that there's a different ethos of those streets than there is in Crawfordsville or Greencastle, that Lafayette is seeming to actively try to look a little more modern, whereas Greencastle and Crawfordsville seem to be trading on, you know, it's the nice home community. Not much has changed. We're still the small community that you can feel at home in. Can you find a balance between those two?
I think you have to find a balance. And you know, we talk about facades, but again, that's just the facade. You have to have the ability to get in there and really fix the structure itself. And we feel like we want to retain that kind of image. We want to keep it that nice downtown feel. I don't think we're really after the modern look in our downtown. And in fact, things that have been constructed recently, there have been restrictions put on them that it has to fit. It has to, you know, have that look of our classic looking downtown, if you will. And we're going to be making some moves here in the next few months, the next couple years, to really change that and get us back to more of that feel, you know, with the work that's proposed around the county courthouse to clean that up, to make that look nice, and to put the clock tower back on the courthouse. I mean, I know that sounds, you know, to some people that doesn't make much sense, but I think that really sets the stage that, you know, this is the downtown, this is the heart of it all. You know, we want to create that environment in our downtown, and that's very popular today. People want that.
All right, well, that's the kind of thing we'll be talking about on this program in coming months. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thanks for being
here. Likewise, thank you.
And please do join us for our next program with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. This has been Ask the Mayor. Have a nice rest of your day.